Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and welcome if you're watching this live on YouTube or if you're listening to this on the podcast, either via the Red Rock basketball page or via Hardwood Paroxysm. Welcome, and thank you for listening. Today's podcast, I'm joined by not one guest, but two guests, two very very special men from the Fantasy Fix. I've got Zach Ruiz and Sam Macy. Guys, how you going?
Hey, good, mate.
Doing great.
Sam's been on the podcast a couple of times last season. Zach, this is your first appearance here, so it's good to have you on.
Hello, finally. And welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast.
My name is Josh Lloyd, and I'm just getting some feedback there through my ears, so that wasn't a great start, but we're ready to go. Now, Zach, you last year you did this, and you did it again this year. You set up the first. Well, I think it's the first. I don't think I've seen any others anywhere. It's the first industry-based fantasy mock draft for the season. It is the first, isn't it?
Yes. Yep. First one.
So yeah, he set this up a few weeks ago and got a lot of talented fantasy writers and analysts, and he also got me involved in it as well. And we went through and did a mock draft with it was a 12 team, 8 category roto mock draft, and he's published it now up on his website, The Fantasy Fix. Guys, it was interesting to say the least. It was fun. It's always fun to get into drafting early. Now, Sam, you started off with the first pick. I had the second pick. Zach, you had the fourth pick. So we had three of the first four picks, which is always an advantage in snake drafts, because you get your hands on. There's basically four really elite guys that are in the NBA in terms of fantasy circle, and we're able to get our hands on those players. Sam, you had pick one. It's a pretty obvious choice which way you went. Let's talk about your team. Run through your team. Who did you pick at the one spot through all 13 rounds?
So I took Davis first. I mean, his results pretty self-explanatory. He got that elite percentages, massive steals, massive blocks, points, rebounds. Once you've got that base, because he takes so many field goals and so many free throws, you can take a flyer on guys who might be a bit lower in those percentages later on, which is what I did. Second and third rounders. I went for Gordon Hayward and Victor Oladipo in the second and third rounds. So I kind of wanted to build on Davis's percentages, especially a free throw percentage. Means I could look for a sort of bigger rebounder blocker later on in the draft.
Then you followed up with, in round four, you've gone with Giannis Antetokounmpo, so it's pick 48. Now, he wasn't a top 50 player last year, wasn't a top 50 player the year before, but obviously you're anticipating that he is going to become, this is going to be his breakout year, and a lot of people are predicting that. Are you relatively comfortable that he can exceed that position, or do you think that's sort of where he's going to be come the end of the year?
No, I think that's his basement. He's definitely got top 20, top 30 potential. The position eligibility is a bonus. You can slot him anywhere, shooting guard, small forward, power forward. They've talked about him playing center. I can't really see that. But the way the NBA is playing out, his long term future might be at power forward, depending on how Jabari Parker turns out. It's hard to find a guy who can do a steal and a block and shoot 50% from the floor. You got guys like Josh Smith who can do that steal block combo, but their field goal percentage will just kill you. So to find a guy who's not even going to be 21 when the season starts with that much potential, at 58 I think was a steal.
Yeah, well,
sorry, 48.
Well, I'm in the middle of writing an article about out of position stats. And when I'm looking at guys who are sort of guard eligible, you're looking at, you know, which guys get your blocks or which guys have a high field goal percentage for guards. And he's a shooting guard eligible player, and his name was appearing on all these lists. And made me think, okay, look, he's gonna get blocks. He's gonna get this high field goal percentage. You know, he is going to start improving his ability to hit threes, and I think that he can take that leap significantly. The problem I'm slightly worried about is just, there's a lot of guys in Milwaukee. Maybe he starts off that way early, but when Jabari Parker comes back, there's just going to be a lot of people around. Now, the good thing about Giannis is he doesn't need to score to be valuable. He can do other things. Like, he will score, but he gets those rebounds. He'll get steals. He'll get blocks. Hopefully, he hits threes. The percentage is there. He'll do a lot of other things. So I think it's a pretty solid pick. Then you've gone with Kemba Walker, who I think is a very underrated fantasy guy. Kyle Korver, Tyson Chandler. The next one that seemed maybe a little bit early, but you can tell me what you think about it, Sam. Yusuf Nurkic at the end of round 8. What's your thought process there?
I love Nurkic's game. I just think he's, his backup in Denver this year is, I think, Joffrey Lavergne, I think it is. He's just not going to have that much, you know, opposition at the center spot or competition. Sorry. His stats last year as a starter, they were pretty average. You know, 8 points, eight rebounds. He did a steal and over a block in 23 minutes. So I feel if he's going to get 30 minutes, he's going to do a double double. He's going to have more than one steal game, more than probably a block and a half, maybe two blocks a game. There's only upside there. He's so young as well. I just think I think it was 96. 96. I was tossing up between him, Gorgui Dieng, and Miles Turner. So I went with the guy who's got the more definitive, sort of defined role as a starter.
Yeah, it's. I'm worried about his knee injury, which has kept him out for the last few months. But apart from that, you're right. He's going to get. We hope he's going to get minutes. And you know, after what happened with Denver last season, with all of the coaching issues and the rotational issues. And hopefully he's learned how to keep his fouls down. I love Nurkic too. I think he's going to be a great player and a great fantasy asset. I'm just slightly worried about the injuries, and hopefully he keeps his foul rate down. Now he ended things off with Ryan Anderson, Al-Farouq Aminu, who I think is a steal in round 11. Isaiah Cannon, who, even if he's not the starter in Philadelphia, I think he still brings tremendous value. And Aaron Gordon in the last round. Have you got big hopes for Aaron Gordon, Sam?
Yeah, I do. I think he's a supreme athlete, and he's clearly worked on his game and his three-point shot. But I tell you, to keep Zach awake, maybe we get him to talk about Gordon because he's playing for his Magic.
Yeah.
So what have you seen? What have you seen from him, Zach?
I mean, basically what everybody else has seen. I mean, all the reports here that he's just in prime shape. I mean, he looks like a different player. His dribble drive has improved. He's not getting stripped as much whenever he's going to the hole. His pull-up jumper and step back has really improved. Everything's positive. I mean, you know how that stuff is. Teams only put out the good reports mostly, but I mean, everything leads to me believing he should start at small forward. He can really pad the stats if he does.
Well, he's got we saw him in Summer League. He didn't just play well. He just destroyed Orlando Summer League when he was there. His shooting is completely different to what it was coming into the league. Now, he's still always a worry about his free throw percentage, but he shot the ball a lot better than what we anticipated last year. He was hitting threes. He was taking guys off the dribble, pull up three. He was doing everything, basically. And then you've got the athleticism to throw in there as well, with his ability to get blocks and get steals. He could be massive next season. I think that he's going to be a really, really good pick. And I don't know what you guys think, but if I'm in a standard, a 12-team, a 10-team league, once the pick count gets over 100, it's basically just taking a flyer on a lot of guys. Because if they don't work out, in 2 weeks, they're done. That's it. I'll move on. I'll get someone else. Because you're turning over 4 or 5 spots on your team comfortably each season. If it doesn't look like it's happening in the first few weeks, they're gone. So that's where you're taking those guys. So your last few picks, Aminu, Cannon, and Gordon, they could easily be top 80, top 70 guys. And to get them after pick 100 is fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, Zach, go ahead, Sam.
Right. I think Cannon is a guy who, I mean, I can see Philadelphia playing him more than Roten, just because Roten's a guy who needs shots. And while he does get the odd assists, they're not, you know, standard assists like a Cannon who might do pick and rolls with Okafor or Noel. They're going to need a guy who can space the floor. Stauskas can be that guy. Probably Covington can be that guy. But I think they wanted Cannon as soon as he became available from the Rockets. They made the deal to get him, put him straight in as a starter. And he had some really good games for them. I think he dropped 30 points in one game. He averaged nearly 3 threes a game over the last month, I think. He's got real upside there. He didn't get many assists, but he also didn't play many minutes. So
to play much at all. Like, he played 20 minutes and he still dropped 2 threes and get 12 points, and that's enough at pick 140 or 150. You don't need him to do much more than that. Zach, your team.
Yeah.
I think you got the first, maybe not break in the draft, maybe things started to go a little bit the way I didn't expect them when Kevin Durant went number 3 and you were left with James Harden at 4. That's pretty much a no-brainer pick. Were you anticipating to have to choose between Durant and someone else at that spot? Is that that spot?
Yeah, I think the 4 spot's where it gets not difficult because they're all great players, but you're sitting there wondering, Harden likely goes at 3. I have to decide between Durant and the foot issues. Am I scared of that or not? Do I go with LeBron, who's free field goal percentage isn't quite as elite as it used to be. Then you got the young guys like Cousins and Westbrook, who you have to at least factor in. But whenever Harden fell, I was pretty pleased that I didn't have to make that tough choice.
Yeah, exactly. In the Red Rock Listener League, I had pick 4, and it went Davis, Curry, Harden. So then I was left with the choice, and I didn't go Durant. I actually went with DeMarcus Cousins at 4 there, just because I was worried about about Durant's foot now. He'd probably be fine. We've heard reports that he's going to be okay, but who knows? We just don't know what's going to happen. We also heard he was going to be fine when he came back last year the first time and when he came back the second time, and none of that stuff really played out. So it always is a hard spot. Now, your second pick, you picked Eric Bledsoe. Now, we had a comment come through as we were recording this. This is one of the benefits of people who are watching this live. Was a man's commented, Reggie Jackson and Eric Bledsoe seem to have gone very early. Haywood too, but to a lesser extent. Was there something in the settings to make these guys go early? Well, you've spoken about Gordon Haywood already, Sam. But Zach, Eric Bledsoe for you in the second round, I don't think it's high at all. He was a top 20 roto guy last year, so I'm happy with that. So what's your rationale for taking him there ahead of some of those other guys who went after him?
Basically the same as you said. I mean, it's just, I mean, he did it last year. I mean, he just fills the stat sheet. That's kind of what I'm looking for in that spot, is just a guy that does a little bit of everything, complements Harden real well, gets a three, gets one plus steal, even gets half a block. So between him and Harden, I'm getting a block a game. Solid points, rebounds, assists. His field goal percentage isn't awesome, but it's almost 45%. I mean, that's suitable there. I mean, he does it all.
I agree. Look, he's one of the – there's not many guys, especially early on, who are necessarily better roto than head-to-head guys, and I think Bledsoe is, because he's doing it all, point scoring, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks. Like, he's doing it all, and he generally shoots a pretty good percentage. I've got no issue with that pick at all. I think that was a really smart choice. We'll talk about Reggie Jackson one in a sec. We'll go through the rest of your team. You've gone early. Well, maybe not. Maybe you haven't gone early. You picked Rudy Gobert in round three, which – I think that if it was a head-to-head league, he probably would have gone already. He would have gone in the second round. In Roto, does his free throw percentage scare you? Or do you think that because you've got Harden, it's such a high-volume, high-percentage guy that he's able to balance that out?
Right. Yeah, that's my strategy. I want to get one elite big who adds elite rebounds, elite blocks, but doesn't crush your free throw percentage. And he's right on that, just above that line for me. He shot like between 60 and 65%. Last year throughout, and between him and Harden, if you combine their two just alone, they shoot 79% from the free throw line. So that's how great Harden is.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. Like, Gobert is not a great free throw shooter, but he's not horrible. He's not Andre Drummond and DeAndre Jordan. We're going to talk about those guys a little bit later, but you can. Yeah, Harden's probably the perfect guy to pair him with in a roto league, because he definitely makes up that difference. He is the guy that can make up that difference. Now, Not everybody is going to be able to make up that difference. If you pair him with LeBron James, for instance, your free throw percentage is not going to make it up. Yeah, John Wall's a decent shooter, but the volume's not necessarily there for him to make up that difference. Whereas Harden's got it all happening in it. That's the right way to go. So I've got no problem with him there. You know what? Even pairing Gobert with Steph Curry, who's a great free throw shooter, but his volume is nowhere near Harden's. So
right.
you can put those two together, but you're not going to get 79% if you put Curry and Gobert together. It might drop a couple of percent, and then you sort of got to figure or focus on getting some other high percentage guys to get it back to that 79-80, which is where you really need to be in a roto league to be close to winning, I think. Now, you followed up with Goran Dragic and Monte Ellis in round 4 and 5. I think they're pretty stock standard picks. Chandler Parsons in round 6. You worried about his knee injury?
It's really early. I mean, everything sounds like he's going to be ready for camp, but I mean, overall, I think he's talking about playing a lot more of the point forward role this year. He was kind of disappointed last year whenever they brought in Rondo, because he expected his role to expand, and it never really did. He kind of just stayed exactly where he was in Houston, and so he's been pretty vocal about that, and I think they've put a team around him where he can run some forward.
Yeah, look, it's gonna be interesting to see how he goes. We hope that he's healthy. Zach Randolph and Robin Lopez, next two picks. Gorgui Dieng, round 9, I think is pretty solid. CJ McCollum in round 10, I think that's a fantastic pick, because he was superb to end the season and in the playoffs. And much like when we talked about guys like Aaron Gordon and Alfred Camino and Sam's team, McCollum's got the ability to be maybe a top 60 sort of talent this year with all the holes that have opened up in Portland. Rodney Hood in round 11. Now, is that, do you feel better about that pick now with the Dante Exum injury?
I mean, I was already feeling, me and Sam have been raving about Hood. I mean, it's borderline restraining order at this point. Hood is pretty much in every article we've put up for the past, like, since May. So and McCollum too, but we just love everything he does. And Summer League didn't do anything to deflate that. He only played in 2 games in the Utah Summer League, but I mean, he was a man amongst children. I mean, he was taking it to the hole like we didn't see last year. I mean, everything that you wanted to see him improve on, it looked like he was just stellar.
But even when we saw him end of last year, he was putting up great numbers. And look, I got him in the last round of a draft. I just didn't. I was very, very happy with that pick. I agree. Because what I think they're going to do now, I think they're going to play Alec Burks at the one a lot, and that'll open up more minutes for Hood to play at the two. Whereas I thought he might have been, you know, squeezed a little bit for minutes with Burks there, but I think that it's working a little bit better in his favour. TJ Warren, you went with your second to last pick. Do you think he's pushing PJ Tucker out of the starting lineup, or do you think that if Markieff Morris goes, that he's moving into the starting lineup? What do you envision for Warren this season?
Well, if Markieff leaves, that'd be great. But either way, I mean, late, like we were talking about earlier, late in the draft, you're just looking for little plugs. And Warren, I mean, he has that upside. If Markieff leaves, that's great. But if he doesn't, I mean, I was looking for a score. And Warren doesn't hit threes, but he's going to fill up the points category. And that's, he filled that perfectly, I think.
Yep, I would agree with that. And then you went with the forgotten man, Jose Calderon, in round 13, who was dreadful last season. But there's a chance that he bounces back. And it's always hard to get assists. And he could, you know, he could provide 4 or 5 with the last pick. And I think that's a pretty solid selection. Now, I'll go through my team. If you guys have got any issues you want to call me out on any of my picks, go ahead. I started with Steph Curry, backed it up with Al Horford in round 2. I took Draymond Green in 3, Greg Monroe in 4, and Nick Batum in 5. And as I detailed in the article that you put out, Zach, I do think that Batum is set for a big bounce back after that wrist injury curtailed his production last year. And Monroe was basically a top 20 guy with Josh Smith gone from Detroit. And now he obviously doesn't have Josh Smith in Milwaukee, and he's going to be one of the primary offensive guys. So I think he's a decent pick there. Jrue Holiday in round 6, he's a top 30 guy if he's healthy. That's a huge if. But it's worth a risk, I think. Then a lot of these guys I got late, not necessarily upside guys, but some of them are. I think they're going to have pretty big seasons. Gortat at 7, I felt I had to go because I needed some big men. Danilo Gallinari in round 8, Robert Covington in 9. And then I went with basically 3 stretch fours in a row. Myers Leonard, Ersan Ilyasova, and Patrick Patterson in rounds 10, 11, and 12. And they're all guys that if things break right for them, could be top 80 players. And then in the last pick, which a guy I seem destined to get in every league, is Ben McLemore, who I think that down the stretch last year, he was really starting to come on. I am a little bit worried with him in terms of what Sacramento is going to do, because they just seem to have, well, they've brought in 2 other guards, Rondo and Marco Bellinelli, and that could push Darren Collison across to play some more of the 2 as well, which could cut into his minutes. They would obviously, I think they'd be stupid to do that, because McLemore is, you know, a high draft pick and a young guy. I think that he can be a pretty good breakout player. Do you guys have any questions for me, or you know, do you want to hang shit on me for any of these picks?
Well, I noticed that I didn't really notice this before. I might have made it and put it in the questions, but you start with Steph Curry, and then you don't draft another point guard aside from Jrue Holiday, who's always has injury speculation. I mean, you can almost assume he's going to miss games every year. After that, you don't really have any other point guards. Was there a reason behind that?
Well, the reason is Al Horford's a over 3 assist guy. Draymond Green's a good passer. He's going to get a lot of assists. Nick Batum can be a 5 to 6 assist guy as well. And I think that covers me pretty okay for assists. Batum basically serves as a point guard. And then Draymond and Al Horford are giving you above average assists for power forward. So I thought that my assist numbers, they may be a little low. And it does depend on Jrue Holiday coming healthy. But I targeted those big men who would give me... Well, out of position stats, yeah, Horford, Green, Batum are all going to give me numbers that would equate to a poor point guard. And adding them together while getting their other stats, I feel is, you know, enough to make me not necessarily get, you know, like a 12 in that category, but maybe an 8, maybe a 9, something like that, if everything works according to plan. Okay.
And we're after blocks on that team, Josh.
How am I for blocks? Yeah,
there's not many on there.
No,
there's...
There's not. Horford gives you some. Batum chimes in with a bit. Gortat is going to give me a big chunk of them. I'm hopeful Myers Leonard gets some time and he can get some blocks. But yeah, you're right. I am lacking in blocks. And in the end, I'd probably... One of those guys, Myers Leonard, Ersan Ilyasova, Patrick Patterson. If one of those guys doesn't work out, I'd probably end up moving them and try and get a blocks guy off the waiver wire. Same with McLemore. It's sort of I just grab those 3 guys who I thought could all, you know, at least 1 or 2 of them should break out and fill that similar role, and then move on from them and then see if I can find blocks off the waiver wire, if it's possible. We'll wait and see. All right, now that's it. That's our teams. Now, Sam, it's back to you. We talked about drafting and our teams. In rotisserie leagues, it's a very different animal to head-to-head leagues, or in my opinion, it is anyway. Not everyone seems to have that opinion, but to me, in terms of drafting, it's a very different way to go about it. What's your strategy when you're looking at roto leagues and when you're trying to build a team? How do you approach it?
I've got a strategy, but I never seem to stick to it personally. And it's you've got to keep your percentages up. Your field goal percentage and free throw percentage, you have to keep up. You know, they've got to be up around 47, 48, 49, 78, 79, 80. As soon as you get down to sort of 70, 71 in the free throws, you're almost worth just going out and getting DeAndre if you can, going out and getting Drummond, because you're never going to be able to pick that back unless you've got a Durant coming back mid-season or something. It's just not something that, it's not a counting stat like steals or blocks where you can go get, you can luck into a guy like Whiteside or Gobert off the waiver wire and suddenly your team's gaining three blocks every day that they play. It's not something that you, like Zach was saying, you have to have a guy like Harden to offset someone like Gobert who, at 65%, he's not terrible, but that's enough to really sink you in that category.
Yep, that's spot on. That's the way I look at it too, that you need to keep these percentages up, because you might be able to find a guy off the waiver wire who shoots 85% free throws, but he'll probably do it on 1.5 attempts, and it's not enough to get your percentage up. You don't get high percent, high volume guys. You just can't find them. It's very rare that you get anyone like that. Like getting Robert Covington last year, he was a high percentage free throw guy and he took a decent amount of attempts, but that doesn't happen all that often. You know, Whiteside, the same thing with field goals, but it just doesn't happen. It's just so hard to get it. And I'll talk about this in a sec, but if your percentages are down, it is just, it's so hard to get them back up. It's almost impossible.
It's why a guy like, it's why Davis and Curry are 1 and 2. Both of them shoot well above average in field goal and free throw for their positions.
Yep.
And as you say, a guy like Covington, you might find late, but he's going to murder your field goal percentage at 40%. And then if you get a guy like Whiteside, might shoot 58% from the field, but he'll shoot 50% from the line. You very rarely get a guy who's both. So if you can, even a guy like Marco Bellinelli, who could end up starting in Sacramento, I don't think he will, but he could end up shooting 46, 47% from the field, along with that 80% free throw. That's a guy you need to keep an eye on, because, you know, most of those guys have one weakness and it's usually one of the percentages.
Zach, how do you approach roto leagues?
Kind of in the same as you guys. I mean, this year I've kind of noticed, there's no drafts to base it on, but from everything that I estimated before we did this strip mock, I was noticing that I thought big guys would slip a little bit, which I found kind of odd, but that's kind of the approach I took. I mean, I was going guards who don't kill your field goal percentage early. I wanted to get one elite big man in the top three rounds, like I said. So I got Rudy Gobert, and then I filled up my roster out with point guards, wings who pitch in steals, pitch in just a little bit of everything. And then once it got to like round 7, I went Zach Randolph, Robin Lopez, Corgi Jang, all who solid percentages. Two of those guys get blocks. I mean, Randolph, I waited on rebounds, and then I get Randolph in the 7th round. He was 7th in rebound per game average last year. So, I mean, waiting seemed to work out pretty well.
Yeah, so the Randolph one is interesting because he doesn't do anything apart from points and rebounds, but he does them very well. And if you've built the rest of your team around that and then you just slot him in with his 18 points, 10 rebounds or whatever, it's a fantastic bump. And all those guys, Randolph, Lopez, Jing, like they're just great percentage guys. Robin Lopez is a fantastic percentage guy. He's like a 50 field goal, 80% free throw guy, potential to do that. Yeah, Jing could be similar to that. They're really good guys. And that's exactly the way I think you need to approach it. Now, that brings me to my next question. Would you ever draft Andre Drummond, DeAndre Jordan, or Dwight Howard in a roto league?
Not me personally. They're not really on my list. I'm not a punt guy. I've tried it before a few years back, and it just I never had a chance in the league. So
it's pretty much impossible.
Then, I just clear.
Sam, how do you attack it?
I can actually brag here. I won a league last year taking Drummond in the 3rd round in a roto league because I had Harden 1st round, Bledsoe 2nd round, Drummond 3rd round. Pretty much exactly what you've done here. I think I got Gallinari late in the season, and I basically couldn't. I think I had Rondo traded him away as soon as the season started because I knew I would not be able to hold both of them. And I ended up drawing the league, but winning it. But free throw percentage was sort of still middle of the road. So if I didn't have Drummond, if I had a guy like Gobert instead of him, I probably would have won easily.
Yeah, that's look. It's not easy. Look, it can definitely be done. Out of curiosity, Sam, how many people are in the league?
It was a 14-team league on one of the Suns' websites.
Now, that is a key point that if you are punting a category in Roto, it's more achievable in a deeper league. If you're in a shallow league, it's pretty much impossible to do it. But in a deeper league, it is actually a little bit easier to do it while punting. While 14 is not the deepest of leagues, it is a little bit easier to do it to get away with punting a category in a Roto league in a deeper league. And the more competitive the league, it's actually easier to get away with punting as well. There's a whole bunch of math behind it that I have looked at, and I don't have it all in front of me at the moment, but it is a little bit easier to do in a deeper league. I would not get them. DeAndre Jordan, Drummond, it just ruins everything, and it's very hard to come back from it. Like DeAndre Jordan, I did some numbers the other day. DeAndre Jordan, if you paired him with James Harden, I think it was Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook, your free throw percentage was 76%. And that's still not enough to be up the top of that category.
Seven.
And you're not going to get those guys. You're not going to have Harden, Paul, and Westbrook on your team. You're just not going to do it because all those high volume, high percentage guys go in the first round. You're not going to get them all unless you're just a master trader and just sacrifice the rest of your team. It just makes it too hard. And you pretty much need to, in a 12-team league, be like a 9 in every category on average to win. And if you've got a 1, then you have to be like a 10 or 11 in other categories, and that makes it that one step harder.
Right.
All right, now let's go through some of these other picks that I thought were a little bit interesting. Reggie Jackson at 20, we had Was a Man mention that before. What do you think of that pick? Is that feels a little early for me, but I don't hate it at that spot. Do you think that Jackson can do what he did in that second half in Detroit? You know, put up those big 20 assist games, the triple doubles, and average the 9 or 10 assists that he averaged. Do you think that he can do that again? Is 20 pushing it? Do you think you can get him later? It's not always about, look, he might be a top 20 guy, but do you think that in general you can get him later in drafts?
Go, Zach. Okay. I didn't. It was the first pick that really raised my eyebrows in the draft. I mean, not counting Durant, because, I mean, that's just personal preference. But I was like, whoa, Reggie Jackson, second round. But, I mean, he did have the elite assist numbers once he got to Detroit, which Mark pointed out in his answer in the question I asked him on the site. But I don't know. He didn't seem to be concerned at all about Jennings coming in. And while you can say that Reggie Jackson's just got paid huge money, he's still going to get his minutes, and he should still have a production. I mean, I think it's it'd be a little foolish to disbelieve that it's not going to have put any dent in Reggie Jackson's numbers whatsoever.
I would say that you're right, it will, but you might get 2 or 3 months of completely unhindered Reggie Jackson production, which is going to be okay, but I would be shocked if Jennings is not going to come in and play 30 minutes all season. Right. That's fair enough. Like, I don't think that's much up for debate, but he can come in and play 20, and that might mean Jackson moves down from 35 minutes down to 30 minutes, and it might drop him 2 assists a game, might drop him 3 points a game. It might drop his rebound numbers. It might drop him a bit, which means he's a little bit risky at that point. But if you're drafting, you just want to start the season off, start him off high, maybe flip him before Jennings comes back, then I don't see it. It definitely is eye-raising, and I reckon you can get him at least a round later in most sort of drafts, but it's not a horrible decision by any stretch. Rudy Gay at 33 is a guy that I wanted to talk to you guys about, because I think that for a Roto League, Rudy Gay is a fantastic option in these sort of drafts. And I think 33 is probably a little bit too low. He was picked up by Kyle McEwen from RotoWire. I think that's a fantastic pick. He was amazing in the second half of last season. Do you have any reason to think that we're going to see a different sort of Rudy Gay with the changes that Sacramento's made, Sam?
No, I don't think so. I think he's still going to be the 19, 20-point scorer. I think his career averages are incredible. I think he's had 7 straight seasons of about 18, 19 points, 6 rebounds. He had more assists last year. I was just looking at stats. 9th ranked player in the last month of the season, 11th over the last 2 months. So I don't think he's a player who's going to be affected by a ball dominant point guard like Rondo. He's going to get his, whether he shoots early in the clock, whether he has some ISO plays. He seemed to mesh well with Cousins. He's a guy I just think who's underrated, consistently underrated, because in reality, he might not be as good as people thought he was going to be. He's not this top 20 player that everyone thought he was going to be coming out of UConn, but he is a really good player in fantasy.
And for Roto Leagues especially, he's fantastic. And the reason I wanted to bring him up, because I think it was a massive steal, in my Roto rankings for last year post All-Star, he was the 8th ranked player. And yeah, that's close to just what you said there, Sam. So look, getting him at pick 33 is a steal when we're not expecting a major drop-off. He's not declining. I think that's a fantastic. And I have no issue if anyone was to take Rudy Gay and say round 2. You probably don't need to, though, because no one else is going to be that high on him. But that's the sort of level where he's going to be at. Now, the next guy I want to talk about was Kyle's next pick in the 4th round. That's Andrew Wiggins at pick 40. Now, Wiggins was a better Roto guy last year than a head-to-head guy in most sort of metrics. Does he turn the corner and become a top 50 guy? What do you think, Zach?
Not quite. I think last year his numbers were inflated a little bit by his minutes. He was playing 39 minutes a game last year. And as much as he's a young kid and everything, I don't think they're going to be running him into the ground like that this year. They could build a lot more depth around him. I just can't see that him. Everybody seems so quick to loop him in as LeBron. Like, look at his numbers compared to LeBron, and it's just like he's the next LeBron. And while, sure, I mean, he has plenty of talent, I mean, but there's no reason to assume that in his second season he's going to jump into the top 20 of fantasy or anything.
No, I'm with you. I'd be happy taking him sort of inside the top 60, but inside the top 40 is a little bit high for me. He was good at stretches last year, but it was when everybody was out. It was when Rubio was out. It was when Pekovic was out. It was when Kevin Martin was out. It was when it was basically him just doing everything for every minute of the whole game. And that's not going to be the case. Their front court is stacked with bodies at the moment. There's a lot of guys that can play in the back court. There's Rubio, there's Martin, there's Levine there. Now, he's not going to have 40 minutes. He's not going to have the ball in his hand. And when Martin was there, when Rubio was there, he wasn't good. Yeah, he scored occasionally, but especially from a fantasy point of view, he just wasn't good. Now, he's going to take a step forward. He's going to improve, but I'm just be a little bit wary about taking him inside the top 50. It could definitely work out spectacularly well. I just think that he's probably not a top 50 guy until maybe next season. Sam, do you have any differing thoughts on that?
No, I totally agree. I think he's definitely not LeBron. I don't think he's even Paul George. To be honest, I think he's more like a Corey McGiddy type guy. Gets his points, does it quite efficiently, gets the line a hell of a lot, slashes, incredible athlete. But he's not steals, he's not blocks, he's not threes, he's not assists. To be honest, with Rubio back, Levine being able to play point guard as well, I think there's limited upside in that situation.
No, I agree with that completely. Now I want to move on to rookies now and talk about where a couple of those went. Karl Anthony Towns went at pick 57. I love Karl Anthony Towns. That feels high to me because I just don't know what's going to happen with his minutes. Sam, where are you looking at him? Okay, he could be a fantasy beast in 2 years' time. He could be one this year, but I just don't see him getting 30 minutes a night. Do you envisage that happening?
I don't know if he needs 30 minutes a night, though. I mean,
okay.
If you see what he did in college, he was 11 points, 6 rebounds, a couple of blocks, and he only played about 21, 22 minutes, I think it was.
Yep.
He might not need that many minutes to be effective. I mean, even Nurkic, who was pretty limited offensively, nearly did a double-double when he was a starter. So I don't see any reason why Anthony Towns, or Karl Anthony Towns, he's going to get spooked for the ball when he's playing. They're probably going to move Pekovic, or at least keep Pekovic on the bench. They're not going to play Pekovic unless it's to move up his trade value. So he's going to get ample opportunities to, you know, start scoring early on, and he's only going to get better as the season goes on. So getting him at 57, he might be ranked 100th over the first month or two, but after the, you know, once he starts getting 30 minutes, he could be a top 20, top 30 player. So that's a payoff, really.
That's true, that he's going to struggle early on, like all rookies do. I think he's probably more comfortable around the 70 to 75 mark when I did my like projections for his college comparisons and that sort of stuff. If he was getting 24 minutes a night, he comes out at about 85 or something like that. So if he jumps up, he would be a bit higher. But I'm just worried about the other big men. You mentioned Pekovic, and he'll probably only get 18 minutes a night. But Gorgui Dieng is another young guy. He'll get minutes. Kevin Garnett's going to start, and he's going to play 18 minutes on some nights. And there's also Adrian Payne. There's also Nemanja Bjelica.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say that. But he is a guy who was highly coveted. They paid him a decent amount to come over and sign a contract here. They're not going to sit him and play him 2 minutes a night. He's going to play some minutes as well. And, you know, I'd think they'd be looking at a future front court of Bjelica, Bjelica, anyway, you know who I mean. I think they're looking at him, Townsend, Jeng as the foundation of their front court rotation for years to come. So they're going to want to get him involved in it as well. Plus, he's got pro experience. Not saying he's going to be as impactful as Mirotić, but he could be a guy like Mirotić this year and could be more ready to adjust in the NBA game than what Towns is. So that's another reason for me to be a little bit hesitant on Towns for next season.
Isn't it sad we didn't even mention Anthony Bennett?
Oh, yeah, there's another guy, Anthony Bennett's there now. I don't imagine him cutting it, but he's another body who is young and maybe they want to see
the body, or right, the big body.
He's but he's another guy that's there. It's just something that's a little concerning. Zach, how do you see it with Towns? Do you see him getting 30 minutes? Do you see him being eased in at minimal minutes? What do you see them doing?
I think he'll play up to 24, 25 minutes, but I think a lot of that's based on what he does with his foul trouble. I mean, that's the biggest concern right now, is he gets caught. Pump fakes are just eating this kid alive. Like, he hasn't been seeing him his whole life. That's the biggest concern for me. But the rebound block upside, even if he plays 20 to 24 minutes, I mean, that's so high that he could be a specialist on your team, because his free throw percentage, I mean, he shot good from the free throw line in college, and his field goal percentage was good too, but in summer league, he was under par in field goal percentage. So you might have a little bit of a roller coaster as far as that goes. But if you're wanting an upside elite rebound block guy in those middle rounds, and you didn't get one of the guys in the second round whenever there was that huge run, I mean, I wouldn't mind reaching on him just a little bit.
I'm always the opposite, because I just don't want to reach on them. I'd just rather take someone who I'm not going to have to sit through until Christmas and wait for something to turn around. Now, he could play 24 minutes and get two blocks and get 8 rebounds still, but I just don't know what else is going to be there. The volume won't be there necessarily on his percentages to really have much of an impact. I would rather wait a couple more rounds, but I can't really blame it, because it could pay off. It's just, historically, like last year, one rookie was a top 100 player. Like, there's not many guys who end up being top 100 players out of rookies, and Towns is great, and he's talented, and I think that if you're doing a dynasty rookie draft, you take him number one, and then you don't even consider anyone else. But I'm just not sure that I want to. I know that I'm not going to be looking at him inside the top 60 most likely. Emmanuel Mudiay went with the next pick, and I think he's actually in a better situation to succeed, because he's going to get all the minutes in Denver. Basically, my worry about him is percentages, and he's going to be in that sort of situation where he's going to hurt your field goals and he's going to hurt your free throws. How far does that knock him down in your estimation, Zach?
Quite a bit. I was just surprised to see him go before some of the guys that he did. But like you said, the percentages. I mean, Elfrid Payton last year was kind of in the same boat. I mean, everybody knew he was going to start. The minutes wasn't a concern. You knew that he had upside in the rebound, assist categories. But his percentages hurt you real, real bad early on. I even dropped him in a 12-team league. I think it was our Dirty Rotten Scoundrels league that we did together. I couldn't afford to hold him at some point. But yeah, that's my biggest concern. I mean, Ty Lawson, George Hill went right after him. I'd consider both those guys better options there.
Well, Ty Lawson's the next guy I wanted to talk about. Sam, with him heading across to Houston, look, he was already not a great guy last year anyway. Look, he got a stack of assists, but he didn't really do much in many other areas. Is 61 about right for him, or do you think that's going to be, he's going to have more of a drop off, or do you think he's going to affect James Harden?
No, I think it's too high for him. He probably would have lasted another round. He might see his assists get halved. Like, he was over 9 a game, I think, last year.
Yep.
He's not going to go close to that next year. I mean, Harden is the most ball dominant shooting guard since probably Kobe in his prime, or Wade, I guess. But the Rockets are built with Harden creating, and Lawson did not have a good shooting year last year. I think he was 43-ish from the field. Wasn't even good from the free throw line either. And he's not exactly a knockdown three-point shooter. So I think he might end up with more time share with Beverly than probably most people would hope for.
I think that Beverly should start over Lawson. That's my opinion. I think that Beverly fits really well. James Harden's the point guard of that team. He controls things. Beverly sits down there, knocks down threes, and plays defense. And Ty Lawson doesn't knock down threes and doesn't play defense. So I don't really see it. Look, good players generally can find a way to work together, but I think that Beverly just complements what Harden does. And I'd be more than I wouldn't be shocked if I saw Lawson coming off the bench and playing 25 minutes, and that helps the Rockets win, but it doesn't necessarily help him get big numbers. And I agree that I don't think I'd be touching Ty Lawson inside the top 70 or top 75, especially when there were some other options there available from the point guard position. Alfred Payton, Ricky Rubio, George Hill, Michael Carter Williams, all these guys were still available who could, you know, who are in a more of a guaranteed sort of situation.
Would you take Rubio over Lawson?
Yeah, yes, I would. I'm a big Rubio fan. The field goal percentage is worrisome, but it's as much of a worry as what Gobert's free throw percentage is. It's not Drummond, it's not Jordan territory. It's recoverable from. He averaged almost 6 rebounds a game last year, Rubio. He can get a stack of steals, and he gets, you know, he's a double-digit assist threat as well. So he can do all that, and he's not Rondo. He doesn't not hit threes. He can hit threes as well. He's a horrible finisher, but he can actually hit threes. So he's got that to his abilities list. I'm a very big Ricky Rubio fan. I think that he can be a superb fantasy guy.
I took him in most of my leagues last year, and so the amount of hair I pulled out, probably why I'm wearing a hat, but his injuries just kill you. Like, and there's never you could get Levine, but they're totally different fantasy players. So if you've penciled in Rubio to get you 8 to 10 assists, 2.5 steals, 4, 5, 6 rebounds, Levine's not that sort of guy. No. So you might be, yeah, I got Levine, or even Mike Williams, I guess. But if you get Levine thinking he's going to produce Rubio stats, it throws your whole team's stat sort of profile out the window.
It definitely does. But that's like, I was picking Rubio last year as well on a lot of teams, but I was picking him in the 20s or in the early 30s. If I'm getting him in the 60s or 70s, he's not the linchpin of what I do for my team. Like, it'll be a nice bonus if I get 10 assists, 6 rebounds, 2 steals, and, you know, 12 points with 1-3. That's a great bonus, but I'm not building my team around it. So I'm all in for Ricky Rubio this year. I'm not worried about the injuries at all. They killed me last year, but it's an injury. It happens. You know, a severe sprained ankle happens to a lot of people. Jimmy Butler suffered sprained ankles, you know, the year before. And look what happened to him last year.
Steph Curry,
it's, you know, he basically, it was almost written off as a prospect because he couldn't get his ankles right, and he was missing games and games and games, and now you don't expect him to miss any time at all. It's something that happens to every, like, I've just been doing a lot of injury research lately, and everyone goes down with ankle injuries. Some of them last longer than others, but no one is immune to ankle injuries. It doesn't mean you're injury prone because you sprain your ankle. You're jumping and you're landing on other people's feet all the time. It happens. It's not like he's in a situation where, you know, he's constantly tearing a knee ligament or his shoulder is always popping out of its joint. It was something. It happened once and that was it. I'm not too concerned about that. Zach, what are your thoughts on Rubio?
I'm kind of in the same boat with you guys. I mean, that stretch in the draft, I mean, you can look Lawson, Rubio, Alfred Payton, a couple picks later, Michael Carter Williams. I mean, they're all guys that you worry about their field goal percentage a little bit. I don't know. It just seemed like there was kind of a run on those guys where you're starting to get worried that you're not going to be able to find assists past that point. That just seems about right for those guys. But like you said, the injury concern isn't as bad whenever you're getting Rubio in that stretch instead of last year where, like you said, he was going around 25.
What I think we're seeing this year in drafts that I've seen is that last year it was just point guards between pick about 20 and about pick 35. You had about 8 point guards go off the board. I feel like that sort of run has moved about 20 or 30 spots back, and that's when all the point guards start going off, around that 40 to 50 mark. Like, you see, it might start with Kyle Lowry around 35 to 38, whereas, you know, last year that was starting around pick 18. So you're seeing all these point guards moving back as guys like, you know, Rudy Gobert move up and Draymond Green move up, and wing players, Klay Thompson, Jimmy Butler, are all moving up into that 10 to 25 range, where earlier it was point guard. So it's definitely a different way of looking at things this year with the draft. Now, another guy I want to talk about is Nikola Mirotic when it picks 75 in this draft. And Mirotic was awesome last year. He was fantastic when he got the opportunity, but I'm worried about the opportunity for him this year. This is something that nobody knows. We're all guessing. Zach, what are the Bulls going to do in this front court? Who's going to start? How are the minutes going to... I was having a discussion with Mark Roberts from RotoWire the other day, and he's gone, I don't know what to do with the Bulls' rotation. Who gets the minutes? And I tried to look at it, and I couldn't work out a decent answer. So what happens with the Bulls' front court rotation?
Yeah, I'm going to be no better answering that question than you guys. I mean, like you said, it's just throwing darts at it. I mean, you have no idea how the rotation's going to go. You don't want to wish injury upon anybody, but if somebody were to get injured, it'd be a little bit more clear. But then they also drafted Bobby Portis, who, I mean, he's a freak athlete that could come in and get a few minutes too. I mean, it's a confusing situation. It's too – Miritich is – we're almost – if you take him at 75, you're counting. And, I mean, it's safe to assume that Noah will probably miss some games. But, I mean, you're counting on that him to miss a long stint if you want him to reach value.
Look, if Miritich starts and plays 30 minutes, then he's a top 75 guy. But
easy.
Top 50 if he starts.
Easily. He's easily a top 50. But the problem is that the likelihood of that happening is probably less than 30% of him getting 30 minutes a night. Gasol's got to get close to 30. Noah's going to get probably 25 to 26. And Miritich, Taj Gibson, when he comes back, is going to demand 22 to 23 minutes. Bobby Portis, maybe he gets playing time. Who knows what they do? Like, we just don't know. And it's too risky for me to pick Miritich that high. As good as the upside is, you're banking on an injury, which is not, you know, it's less than a 50% chance of happening, in my opinion. So again, that's a little bit too early for me.
I think they're going to trade Gibson, though. I mean,
I hope they
do. He doesn't have any real allegiance to the Bulls like he did with Thibodeau when he was there. And he's on a really cap-friendly contract, I think $8 million a year for two more years, maybe. I think he's going to be the guy who gets dealt. They might get to, you know, trade him for some guard help. But then you've still got a guy like McDermott who's going to need minutes as well.
Yeah, that's another thing. They play him at the four, too.
Yeah, I mean, who's starting at the three? As of now, who is it?
Dunleavy, I would say, almost definitely.
34. Yeah. You hope for Bitter, though.
I would hope McDermott would start there at some point, but I think that it's going to be Dunleavy. I'd be shocked if it wasn't at this point.
Yeah.
Now, Harrison Barnes went inside the top 100. Zach, what are your thoughts on that?
I was a little puzzled by it. Brian sent me a picture immediately after I sent him his questions of, like, I think it was Winshares, showing that he's in an elite group at his age. But I mean, as much as like some advanced analytics are good for the game, that doesn't really always translate to fantasy numbers. And I just don't see where his value is ever. What is he gonna do? What has changed that is gonna take him from? And then I think he was like 160 in this format the last 2 months of the season. And I don't see where anything's gonna change. He wasn't elite at anything even whenever he was given time. But I mean, he played 29 minutes a game, or I mean, I don't see it.
I don't see it either. Considering you took Gorgui Dieng after him, I would have been much happier grabbing Gorgui Dieng at that spot, or even CJ McCollum, who went in the next round. I'd be happy with Luol Deng or Joe Johnson even ahead of him. They're more likely to be locked into a role where they can actually produce, especially Joe Johnson without Darren Williams there. We've seen Joe Johnson in the past really been able to excel when Williams isn't in the lineup. Don't necessarily think he's definitely not at the peak of his powers, but he's still a guy who's going to get minutes, and I think that he's an interesting player in that sort of situation as well. So there are a number of guys I would have taken ahead of Harrison Barnes, but he's a guy that he's going into that situation where he's ending his rookie contract, so he's going to be looking for a big payday. And that, when we talk about, I am writing another piece on this as well about contract year players, but the biggest motivation for contract year guys is the guys coming off their rookie contracts and moving on to getting a big payday, moving from $4 million a year to $15 million a year, as opposed to moving from 12 to 15 or something along those lines. People want their big first payday. We saw it happen a lot last year. So he's got that motivation, you know, potentially that makes him break out. But I don't necessarily see it either. I'm a little puzzled to go that early on him. D'Angelo Russell at 78. Sam, what are the Lakers going to do? That feels early to me as well, because I don't know what Jordan Clarkson's going to do. I don't know what Russell's going to do. I don't know what Kobe's going to do. I don't know what Lou Williams is going to do. I don't know what Nick Young's going to do. I don't know how it's all going to break down. So 78 feels high to me, and I think that Russell and Clarkson both probably should go outside the top 100.
I'd probably have Russell probably late 80s, Clarkson maybe late 90s. Clarkson's already shown what he can do. I mean, he had a good month there, averaging 20 points, 5 boards, 5 assists. Very good percentages, over a steal, over a three. But it's going to depend on, like, basically which one out of those two meshes better with Kobe. And then you've got Lou Williams on the bench, Nick Young on the bench. There's just too many guys there for I don't think anyone in that Lakers team is going to average 5 assists a game, unless someone goes down injured and then Russell might. But I can't see, there's not enough assists in that team with Kobe.
No, Kobe's going to get 5 assists a game probably as well. And that's the thing. And Russell, to me, struggled in summer league. He looked slow. He wasn't athletic. His shot is going to fall at times, but I just don't. With rookies coming in, so many of them coming in, you know, after their freshman year, they're so young. You just don't see breakout rookies. Again, like, you know, one guy in the top 100 last year. The year before, there was probably one guy as well. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but it just doesn't happen. We're not going to get 4 guys, 5 guys end up in the top 100. One of them probably will be, but it's very hard to take a risk, especially inside the top 80 for Russell. Now,
within the next 10 picks, Darren Williams, Derrick Rose, Jarrett Jack all went. I mean, I guess he was just looking for the best upside out of those guys, or maybe he was just not believing that Rose can stay healthy, Jack will keep his job, and Darren Williams will be productive. I mean, what do you think?
I think all those guys have got upside. I think Jack, Williams, and Rose have all got upside to be top 50 guys potentially. They're all in. Rose is potentially or partially in a different situation, that he's, you know, a bit more healthy and he's got a different coach. Jack is now the unquestioned starter, and Darren Williams is on a new team. So they're all in different situations. I think they've all got tremendous upside, and I think they're all really solid picks. I wouldn't be picking Rose inside the top 70, but when we get to that sort of area, and Williams and Jack, I think they've got tremendous upside there, and I would definitely be taking them all over D'Angelo Russell. But I am very averse to picking rookies or reaching on rookies. If they slide 2 rounds, then maybe I'll have a look at it from where their ADP is. But otherwise, I'm just not going to be the guy who takes them, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, now, at pick 102, Dwight Howard went. Pick 103, Rajon Rondo went. Pick 104, Jabari Parker went. All three have got questions. Now, to me, Dwight Howard, at that pick, it's very dependent. Now, the guy that picked him, Chris Towers from CBS, he had DeAndre Jordan, so his free throws were already stuffed anyway. But anybody else who was taking a risk on Dwight Howard at that stage, it's in a roto league, it's not a situation of it being a great value pick. Because you could build your team up, and then you take Howard, and then one category is just destroyed. It doesn't matter where you take the guy. It doesn't matter if he slips to pick 130. If you take him at pick 130, your free throws get destroyed. It doesn't matter that it was a great value, because your free throw percentage doesn't care that it's great value. You're just going to get smashed in that area. So that's probably the only reasonable situation. And that for Chris's team, where his free throws are already going to get a 1, taking Dwight Howard there is a fine pick. So do you guys agree with that strategy?
Yeah. I mean, him going LeBron, Millsap, just looking at the stats now, those guys together are over 12 free throws, about 72, 73%. So he's already, unless he strikes gold and gets, you know, DeRozan and then Gallinari and then a couple other guys, even then he's going to be pushing 78, 79. So to, I guess, tank the category free throw percentage, getting Howard that late is a steal.
Yep.
I personally probably wouldn't do it, or if I did, I'd be looking to move Howard after a month or two of good production and try and get a big free throw percentage guy, even just to try and get those stats back.
It's, Zach, is there any other situation where you would take, him?
No, sorry? I mean, that'd be it for me. The only way that I would consider him at all is if I already took DeAndre Jordan or maybe Andre Drummond. But even then, I guess you're just tanking at that point. So yeah, it's fine pick for them. But other than that, you don't get 9 rounds into the draft and say, hey, now I'm going to tank free throw percentage.
Exactly. So if you haven't looked at doing it before and then Howard falls to your lap in round 10, you just let him go. And if he goes undrafted, who cares? It doesn't matter. You don't just go, I'm going to take him because he's there in the last round, because you've just destroyed your complete strategy or everything that you've worked towards. It just doesn't happen. Now, Rajon Rondo went with the pick after it, and he's a guy who kills both of your percentages and doesn't contribute in many categories. Is he a guy that you would even consider drafting, or where would you look at drafting him, Zach?
He's not really on my list of targets at this point. I don't see it changing either. I mean, I know a lot of people are pointing to this is his year to prove himself, so he gets one final long-term deal or multi-year deal. But, I just don't see it. As for fantasy-wise, even if he gets his assists and steals back to a premium, his percentages are just not stellar.
Oh, I agree with that completely. And then Jabari Parker, Sam, Seth Klein picked him in round 9. I'm just worried that we're not going to see Jabari until January. Do you have that concern?
Yeah, and even then, it's probably going to be on a minute cap. He's not going to be thrown into the starting lineup if the Bucks are winning. They've got the depth to cover him as well. So,
yep, I think Jabari is going to struggle to be fantasy relevant for most of the season.
He will get drafted high, though. If people aren't paying attention, he'll go 60, 70, 80.
He will. Yep, he will.
On name alone.
Brandon Jennings at 107 is another situation like Jabari Parker that we might not see Jennings until January anyway. And we touched on him a little bit with Reggie Jackson before, and that felt a little bit early there for me. But he's an underrated fantasy talent, Jennings, when he's actually getting minutes. All right, now, Zach, Sam, your favorite wild card pick. So we talked about that before. Yeah, rounds 10 to 13 is where you take a stab on someone jumping up. Who was your favorite pick in those rounds from all of the guys that were picked? Sam, we'll start with you.
I really like Stauskas this year. So round 10, early round 10. Love CJ McCollum as well. And I'm really curious about these Portland bigs. They all went really, really close. So Myers and Leonard went. You picked Leonard at 119.
Yep.
I got Aminu at 121. Who else have we got here?
Mason Plumlee went. Where did he go?
Yeah, Mason Plumlee. And then the last one, Ed Davis. They all went really, really close within a sort of 20 picks. So yep. I'm really curious which two of them is going to actually take that starting gig. We've seen Ed Davis start. We've seen Mason Plumlee start. Aminu we've seen start but with a lesser role. Leonard's the wild card, though. He could really take off. I mean, he shot. Nearly did 50, 40, 90 last year.
Yeah, so. he did. He shot 50, 40, 90. I don't think anyone else got close to that. And he was a guy that, like CJ McCollum, he was blowing up in the playoffs. He was playing over Robin Lopez. Lopez would start and he'd play 18 minutes, and Leonard would come in and play next to Aldridge, and he was putting up big numbers. And I don't know how they're going to run it. I would like them to go Leonard and Plumlee as the starters and put Aminu at the three, because they don't really have anyone to play the three at this point. Gerald Henderson shouldn't be playing at all.
Yeah, Aminu is definitely going to be the three. They drafted him back in New Orleans, didn't he, I think? They put him in there.
Yeah, he was part of the Chris Paul trade from the Clippers. But he played a lot of three there. But he played three there, and then he'd come and get 20 rebound games. Like he can do play big from the three. He doesn't have to play as a four. He can play three and do a lot of things there. And he can hit threes, not at a great percentage, but he can hit them in terms of accumulating those numbers.
He hits them in the playoffs. It's a steal and blocks. Playoffs. I think he did two steals a game, 1.5 blocks, 1-3, really good percentages. He's not going to do that again because teams will filter their defense towards him. But he's a guy who, he won't be prime Sean Marion, but he might be old Sean Marion. So lots of rebounds, steals, blocks, putbacks. They won't run plays for him, but he'll cut to the basket, get a lot of offensive rebounds. Get out on the break.
I think that's a really interesting one to go with. Zach, who did you like in those wild card rounds? Who was your favorite pick there?
It's going to sound like I'm doing this just because I'm on the show, but I like Dursun Ilyasova that late. I know a lot of people cringe at just whenever I say that name because everybody has at one point or another been burned by the potential upside of Dursun Ilyasova. But starting at power forward, I mean, behind him, maybe Anthony Tolliver. He should see plenty of minutes. He fits Sam Van Gundy's system perfectly. I mean, they're that late, there's not a risk. I like the pick there. Aaron Gordon was another one. We already talked about him. And if you need rebounds late, David Lee, he may sound unsexy, but in Boston, I mean, he's the one guy that I think is almost assured to get minutes. He kind of fits Brad Stevens. He wants a forward that can pass the ball. Lee kind of fits that.
I think it's I'm happy.
Zaza.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted Zaza so badly in this draft, but Seth took him off me.
Talked about that, I remember.
Oh, it was so frustrating. Because Seth had given me a list of guys he wanted to talk about, and he had Zaza on the list, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to talk about Zaza. I think I'm just going to keep him for this mock and not hype him up. And then Seth's going, yeah, I'm taking him in the next pick. I'm like, oh, don't. I want him. He would have been perfect for what I wanted. But I think Zaza, he was able to put up some really good numbers for Milwaukee down the stretch. He gets a lot of assists and steals as a big man, so he can get you some out-of-position numbers. He can score. He can get some rebounds. JaVale McGee is not going to play 30 minutes. He's not going to take Pachulia's milk. McGee's still hurt. He's still got the leg issue. Like, he's still rehabbing from that from about 4 years ago. He's good insurance, but it's Zaza all the way.
Good comedy guy.
It's exactly what Dallas needs after Rondo, some more knuckleheads.
Yeah,
Shaq and all-star. I thought Seth did a pretty good job of, you know, those last rounds, I just call them dart rounds. You're just throwing darts, hoping that one of them hits on a player that jumps into the top six, five or something. I mean, Sullinger, Zaza, Collison. Everybody just assumes Collison's going to just fall off the map because Rondo's in town, but then nobody likes Rondo.
Yep.
I mean, he's tall enough where he can play point guard, shooting guard. I mean, he's still going to get minutes, and I mean, that late, why not?
Well, he played the two next to Chris Paul in Los Angeles for a big stretch of time and was really, really good. And that's something that he could do again. Now, that cuts into my Ben McLemore pick, but I think that Collison can have... We don't know what they're going to do, but there's definitely a lot of situations where he plays 25, 27 minutes next to Rondo, backing up Rondo and next to him, and he can be valuable. He can hit threes, he can get rebounds, steal assists, he can get some steals. I think he's going to be a real interesting guy that a lot of people will forget about.
Yeah.
Now,
Rondo's always hurt as well.
Yes, he is. And he's got that knee problem, and he's not young as well. Like, he's not a young guy. He's something weird will happen to him. He'll break his face, his elbow will fall off. He's always got something weird happening to him. So he's a likelihood to miss some games. Now, Zach, you said you didn't want to sound like you were saying it because you're on this show about Ersan Ilyasova. Well, I'm going to go the other way, and I'm not saying it because you're on the show, but I really love the CJ McCollum pick in round two. I think, not round two, round 10. I think that he can be fantastic. He was great down the stretch. He made Aaron Aflalo look like the bum that he is now in the playoffs. And I've got no reason why they shouldn't start him at the two. Even if they play him as the sixth man and pay him a backup one and backup two, he should get 30 minutes a night. And I think that with what he's able to do and hit threes, and look, he's not going to shoot the percentages he did in the playoffs because they were crazy good. They were like over 40% from three and over 50% from the field in stretches. That's not going to continue, but I think that he could be a top 50 player. I think that there's not many guys in those last couple of rounds that they could be top 80 guys, but McCollum could be a top 50 guy. So I think that's a really good pick that you went for there. And if you hadn't taken him, I would have snapped him up two picks later when I went with Myers Leonard instead. Now, we had a question come in via email, guys, that I put in here, and I'll read this question out and see what you guys can chime in. This is hello, Josh. This is Mark from Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. I have a couple of questions you can answer on the podcast about Michael Carter-Williams. I had to stop the slide of Carter-Williams in the Red Rock Listener League, Sarunas Marshallonis division, at pick 104 overall. Now, early takes on that. Sam, is that way too late in a head-to-head league?
Yeah, way too late, especially head-to-head.
Yep.
I think head-to-head, he's probably 30, 40 picks different in head-to-head and roto.
Well, the thing is, even in Roto, in his time in Milwaukee, his percentages were way up. His free throws and his field goals were way up. He was like at a 43 and 74 or something along those lines, but they were way up. Zach, 104, too low?
Oh, yeah, especially in head-to-head. I missed that you said head-to-head at first. I was going to say, whatever, but head-to-head, I mean, yeah, that's a steal.
Absolutely. So let's get into his actual questions now. Do you think having a whole offseason with Jason Kidd tutoring Michael Carter-Williams will improve his game this year? Yes. Sam?
I'm going to say no. I actually think Carter-Williams has peaked. I don't think he's going to get much better.
Okay.
His rebounds, his assists, threes, all dropped when he got to Milwaukee. So, I got the split stats.
Do you think that's part of him being on a better team?
Yeah, but the team got worse when he got there.
That's true.
Brandon Knight was killing it for that Bucks team. But, yeah, rebounds dropped by over two a game. Assists dropped by one a game. He only shot 4 out of 28 from three. So that's a big drop-off, especially if you're going to say, right, I'll tank his field goals, free throw, his turnovers or whatever, two out of those. If you're not getting over a three a game from him or over five rebounds and five assists, his value goes down a hell of a lot.
I agree with that. I just do think that he can get a bit better under Kidd. Zach, do you think that the Kidd will have an impact with him during this offseason? And he's got an offseason at a new team. Do you think that will help?
No. I mean, I'm kind of with Sam. I think we've seen his peak, and there's no... I mean, and it was high, I mean, besides his efficiency, but...
It was his career.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, he...
Ninth. Yeah.
And, I mean... Sometimes being surrounded by that much talent isn't always a good thing. I mean, you can have good assist games, but no, not for me.
Now, the next question he has is, will his counting stats overcome his poor percentages? We've mentioned that already. And he said, I drafted him as the 26th point guard. Can you see him finishing in the top 15 at that position? He's definitely going to be inside the top 26 point guards, I would have to say. Zach, do you think he can get inside the top 15?
Probably not. I mean, borderline. But I wouldn't be dropping him in my top 15 point guards, no way.
Sam?
No, I'm going to do the dick move, and I actually wrote down the point guard and Zach's mock. So in a row, these are the guys who went ahead of MCW. So the first few are obviously Curry, Westbrook, Paul, Lillard, Irving, Jackson, Bledsoe, Oladipo, qualifies as point guard, Lowry, Teague, Conley, Dragic, Kemba Walker, Monte Ellis, Tyreke Evans, Brandon Knight, Isaiah Thomas. This is kind of where I'd put them in there. Moutier, Wade, Lawson, George Hill, Rubio, Payton, and then MC Dub. So MC Dub went 26th in Zach's mock. I don't think he's going to leapfrog too many of those guys. Maybe four or five of them.
Yeah, I could see him going ahead of Lawson, of Moutier, potentially. I can see him. I would agree with that, but that's 26 point guards that have gone within about the top 60 picks in Zach's mock there, which is a big difference. And that is also a roto league as well, which also drops him down a bit. But I would take him over Ty Lawson, and I would probably take him over Moutier, but. I don't think he can become a top 15 guy, but I think that getting him a pick 104 is it's definitely pretty good value at that point.
Yeah,
very good pick.
Now let's wrap it up, guys. In terms of this draft, did we see anything? I mentioned a trend I noticed with point guards that they've seem to have been pushed back about 20 spots from where the run of them was happening last year. Did you notice anything from? It's only one draft, obviously, but this is guys who are switched into hoops pretty much year round and watching everything that's happening. Did you see any interesting trends from this that are worth noticing, Sam?
Yeah, your point guard, I agree that it's sort of shifted back a little bit, but not early on. I mean, out of the first 13 picks of this mock, six point guards.
Yep.
And then we had there was a massive big man run. Basically from pick 22, 12 of the next 17 were centers, which is massive. Like, that's where your point guards are shifting back.
That's where they're all going last year in that run there, and now they've all been pushed back two or three rounds, and all these big men are going in that stage. So that to me is the biggest thing that I've noticed. Zach,
Gobert,
Whiteside, all these guys, Nerlens Noel, are all moving into this. But Draymond Green's a big man who's jumped up into that position. Greg Monroe is going to start going higher as well. There's a whole range of guys that are going to go there. You can see Derek Favors get better. There's a whole bunch of guys, and it's pushed all the point guards back significantly. Zach, what have you noticed from this that can maybe qualify as a trend?
Well, I noticed the same things you guys did as far as those two things, but knowing that I was already going to throw that to Sam because he answered it in his question, that was the really good point that he pointed out about those guys. But aside from that, I've seen people on Twitter, like people that have asked me questions and stuff, or they've just made comments that the wing position is thin this year, so you need to get some elite wings early. I'm fine with getting like one shooting guard, one small forward, but I think, at least for me, I like to rack up on the big guys, rack up on the point guards, the guys that are getting those rebounds, the blocks, the assists. But then late, I mean, there's some fine darts to throw. I mean, the three wings that I got in the last few rounds, Aflalo, Aminu, Porter, Aaron Eric Gordon, those all guys all click, are wing players that, I mean, you can get late and you're fine.
Yeah, I would agree with that about the wings. Is that we hear about them being weak, but out of the first few picks, we got Steph Curry, who's shooting guard eligible, Kevin Durant, small forward, James Harden, it's shooting guard, LeBron James is a small forward. So there's a lot of wings early. Then you got Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Jimmy Butler, who all play the wing, Klay Thompson, Carmelo Anthony. There's a number of guys. Eric Bledsoe is shooting guard eligible as well. So Gordon Hayward, all these guys went within the first two rounds. And there are some other guys sprinkled through. Bradley Beal, we're expecting to have a much bigger season. Andrew Wiggins, Rudy Gay. It's not as barren at the wings as what we may have thought. Tobias Harris, Monte Ellis, Nick Batum, I think is going to have a bounce back. Danny Green, we know can contribute everywhere. Damari Carroll is another guy who's wing eligible. Trevor Ariza is a player who's underrated in a lot of situations. I think that the thought of wings being completely barren is not accurate. You know, Danilo Gallinari you grab in the 80s, and he was a top 20 guy, top 15 guy in the last month or so of the season. There's a lot more guys who are excelling, and part of that's because we're going to this, you know, small ball approach where guys who were a small forward eligible then go and play power forward, and that helps them in that number as well. Robert Covington, another sort of guy with this interesting dynamic where there are these talented wing guys playing other positions. Now, Tyreek Evans playing point guard, Brad Beal plays some point guard. All these sort of guys moving all over the place definitely makes for interesting, and it's not as cut and dry as, you know, you can't take wings, because taking Tyreek Evans as a wing player or taking Nick Batum as a wing player, you're going to get 5 or 6 assists from him. That's not a traditional wing player. You know, Brad Beal could go out there and get 4 assists and 5 rebounds and 20 points, and that's obviously super valuable as well. So there's a lot of interesting things with the way all that stuff's breaking down. All right, guys, I think that's about does it for today. Zach, have you got any articles on the fire ready to go for the Fantasy Fix?
Not right away. We got some. We're doing a dynasty mock right now. Sam's running it. You're in that mock, and you actually wanted to say that I like that 1-2 punch you started with. James Harden, Eric Bledsoe. Man, where'd you get that idea?
Yeah, I know. It was a very, very knowledgeable man did that in another Roto mock draft. I actually didn't realize that you went with that same combination until I just saw it here. So I went, oh, you've gone the same two guys there. But yeah, I'm very happy with that. And that Dynasty mocks, it's really interesting, Sam, that setting that up, because when me and Matt Smith did a discussion on Dynasty rankings the other day, there's just so many ways you can go with Dynasty leagues. Like, do you want to go hard and try and smash a league in the first 2 years? Do you want to build it up for a powerhouse for 4 years' time? How do you want to do it? Like, there's a lot of ways to approach it, and that's what makes Dynasty leagues very, very interesting and very almost impossible to do rankings for. So apart from that, Sam, what have you got coming up?
I've got a few things. I've got another Just 8 Minutes, some lesser-known sort of names, guys who just need an opportunity, basically, to produce some stats. And then I'm going to do an A to Z on fantasy basketball. So I'm going to try and make it funny. We'll see. I'll probably find it funny. But
You're the fantasy basketball Photoshop master, so I'm sure you'll and infographic master as well. So you'll have it informative and humorous at the same time.
Marks the paint and word. I wish I had Photoshop.
You were tweeting out a whole bunch of Star Wars fantasy basketball NBA pictures the other day. Have you released them yet?
Nah, not yet. I might do that later. There's about another 15.
He's been talking about that. He's been working on this for at least 2 to 3 years, so I think it's time to let those rip, Sam.
Yeah, well, you let it about 10.
I was waiting for the Force Awakens.
Oh yes,
when the Force Awakens.
That's cross promotion. You just need to get Lucas Films involved and sponsor the post, and you'll be right. Get the promotion out there. They're very humorous. Oh yes.
But since we have all this dynasty, since we're doing the dynasty mock, we're going to be putting out some dynasty. We're just kind of trying to hit on dynasty right now. Like, Sam is working on his top 150, and I'm doing just dynasty rookie rankings, just for those who are in dynasty leagues that are in their second season. They're just going to be drafting their rookies soon, so we're going to have both those out soon too.
Do you have Towns at number one?
Of course.
Yeah, there's I can't find an argument not to have him at number one at this point for a dynasty. Look.
It's got to be.
I think he can be a top 10 guy in 3 years' time, in 4 years' time, comfortably. He can do everything. He can do Anthony Davis stuff, but he can also hit threes, and that's a little bit scary for what he could potentially become. Now, he could be completely useless and flame out, but I don't think he can also pass. Like, some of the things I saw him doing at Summer League were incredible, and I'm really excited to see how Towns turns out in the NBA. Probably won't be this year, but I think we'll see a lot of exciting stuff happening from him. Now, Zach, where can everyone find you on Twitter?
At BigZach44. That's Big Z-A-C-K 44.
Sam, what about you?
I'm at Macetastic. Macetastic. It's a really long nickname. I'm not going to explain how I got it.
It's all about branding. You just got to go with branding. You got to embrace it. Embrace the long nickname. You tell the story one day, and then go with it from there. And everyone's just going to know you as Macetastic, and it's all going to work in your favor. That and Star Wars memes.
I didn't even like Star Wars that much.
Just a lot of material there for fantasy basketball guys. All right, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
That is it. Thank you for coming on. Now, before we leave, it's a couple of things I need to mention. Upcoming shows next week. I've got 3 shows planned for next week. I've got Danny LaRue from Real GM and Sporting News coming on Monday. Matt Smith is on Thursday. We're going to be doing a fantasy mailbag show. And then on Friday night, Saturday morning, Gabriel Harbour, Crazy Gaby from Roto Grinders, is coming on to do some daily fantasy primers, daily fantasy 101, some just talking about daily fantasy, people who haven't jumped into it and want to get some information. So we'll be talking about that over the next week. And then when we get into September, I am going to be doing the 30-team team preview series as well, which will have a number of people on, breaking down everything that happens with all of the NBA teams. Guys, it's been great having you on. Zach, good to have you on and talk to you for the first time.
Yeah, it was great.
Sam, welcome back, and we'll have you back on, or have you both back on at some point during the season. It's good to hear your voice again, even after Australia beat New Zealand in the basketball today.
The real team won today. We won the Blitterzog again. 13 years in a row. We'll take it.
I know nothing about rugby, but the 13 years in a row sounds like a pretty good start.
I can't
argue with that, even though I know nothing about the sport. But I'll take the embarrassment on board.
All right. Really appreciate it. Thanks, Josh.
No problem. Everyone can follow me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and subscribe on YouTube and follow me on Instagram and Facebook and all those different places. And make sure you're following Sam and following Zach as well. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.